Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, a podcast where two friends ask each other questions about comedy, writing, and life, and attempt but often fail to land on any useful answers. I am one half of this podcast, author, staff writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, comedian, and guy who was so nervous to ask a girl out in high school, he did it over AOL, Instant Messenger, and in code, Daniel O'Brien. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hello, I'm Soren Bowie. Singer, songwriter, poet. And I once learned to ride a bike the very first time I tried it.
You know what I love about your entrance is that you matched me in energy.
That's the only thing?
Yeah. Before we get into this show, I do want to say that by the time this episode will come out on Wednesday or Thursday or whenever the hell this show comes out, you will have had a birthday. Are you planning anything for it?
No, nothing.
No. Okay.
It just doesn't feel like a celebratory time. Mm. And I don't really totally know what we do other than, you know, the general stuff that my wife and I both do for each other on the respective days where when it's my day, I get to just have my way. I get to have the sandwich right. That I want for lunch, and I get to have a Dr. Pepper, and I get to watch a movie.
Yeah. Good Lord. I mean, that sounds fun, man. I love it. Your life sounds great. Did you, I think our listeners already know this because you posted about it on Twitter, but in our episode a couple weeks ago, you mentioned thinking that your wife was going to forget Father's Day.
Yeah.
And it sounds like she didn't forget.
Not at all. She did great.
Ah.
I know.
Damn, sorry, huge loss.
She really went above and beyond too, because you are probably familiar with, do you remember Bay Cities, the deli that's in Santa Monica?
Yeah. Oh my God, the fucking sandwiches.
Some of the best sandwiches I've ever had. She's trying to get me Bay Cities because she knows I love those sandwiches. And it was almost impossible to do because they're not even allowing people to do it through meal services anymore. You can't get somebody else to go pick it up anymore because I think that they're getting so crowded that they just stopped doing it altogether. So you got to go there to get it. So she was coming to come up with a reason why she needed to leave the house for 45 minutes with our infant so that she could run there. And I was like that. And then when she revealed what it was, I was like, oh no, that's not worth it. I'll eat a grilled cheese. It's fine. Yeah. Thanks to Skillshare for supporting Quick Question. Break up the routine of a day spent indoors. Explore workshops, classes, and more in topics such as design, illustration, productivity, freelance, and entrepreneurship. Get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ.
We'll get into the show. We're going to ask each other a bunch of questions. You know what the show is. Should we do a quick coronavirus update? Do you have any quarantine, COVID-19 protest? The world is crumbling updates?
Yep. I got news.
All right.
I'm a man of the earth now, Dan. I grew a cucumber.
Hey! Is that forgive me, difficult?
I don't know. It wasn't for me. Okay. I've been gardening. I've got garden boxes now, and I've got an eggplant plant. I've got a tomatillo plant, and I've got a cucumber, but the cucumber is the only one that's produced anything. And it's a real big cucumber. I did it.
That's fantastic. Now I've got, my brother and sister-in-law, they're trying to do gardens in their backyard and finding it almost impossible to keep their 3-year-old out of those gardens from digging and playing.
Yeah.
Is that true with Ronan as well?
Yeah. So we have 3 garden boxes. 2 of them I've planted in, and then 1 is just for him to fuck around in. And so he's got basically his own garden box where he pretends to plant seeds, but then most of the time it's just there's a bulldozer in it and there's a couple other earth movers and stuff like that that he just moves soil around.
Yeah. I think that's probably the right approach. Like we had every once in a while we would have a garden growing up in Jersey where my mom would plant tomatoes and corn and shit and whatever else she wanted to grow that year. And if I was young enough, I was like, you know, like any kid, you see what just looks like your parents plunging their fists into dirt. And I was like, that looks like fun. I want to do that. And to keep me from ruining the garden, there was just like a corner of dirt and mud that I could just hang out in. And he's like, we're gonna take the hose and make some mud, and then you just like sit and play in the mud for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And tuck yourself out. And that's your version of gardening.
Yeah, it was tunnels for me. My mom would dabble in the garden, and then I was allowed to have a section of soil, and I could just scoop down deep enough holes on each side, then I could finally at the bottom of them just start digging it out and connect them. Mm-hmm. And if I made a tunnel, that was the best day of my life.
Oh, like, yeah, that's fun.
Get water to run through that tunnel? Oh, forget about it.
I was obsessed with like filling a bunch of like this small crevice, this like just like a dip of land that was just dirt, filling it with water so it became mud, taking my action figures and planting them there, and then waiting for the mud to harden into dirt, and the action figures looked like they were mistakenly fused with the dirt via some kind of teleportation incident. That was very fascinating to me. Just like watch these, like look at these like half buried, half frozen action figures in peril was,
I think that's pretty common. My brother and I used to do that in the sandbox all the time, and it was, but he would say that they were frozen in carbonite. I didn't know what that meant at the time, but that was like a big deal for him. Was we get them, you get them in the sand, you get them planted in there, and then you wait for it all to evaporate, and then you or sink into the bottom, and then you've got a guy who's, did you ever watch the first season of Legion?
No.
Well, it's just like people half suspended in walls and things like that. Yeah, it doesn't look like they belong there.
Yeah. It was very fun, and I'm glad that it's common and not something that our listeners will hear and be like, oh yeah, you know who else did that? Dahmer.
Well, they might. I mean, there's still time for each of us to become a serial killer.
That's true. People are living longer now.
Yeah, don't close any doors on your potential vocations.
You know, Samuel L. Jackson didn't start his career until he was like 45 or something like that.
It's inspiring.
Yep. I want to get into the show. I have a quick question for you, Soren. Is there anything from your childhood that you didn't realize until very recently was probably weird? Like something that you did and then didn't have to really confront or think about it until recently, and then it dawned on you, was like, oh, that's I probably should have told someone about that. and right off the bat, because this is this podcast, nothing traumatic. This is not a podcast that will hopefully ever require a trigger warning for anyone about something traumatic.
Why don't you go first while I think about this?
Okay. Mine's long, and you might have some thoughts about it. Are you at all familiar with an organization called RILA?
No.
Okay. So back before quarantine, a bunch of coworkers were hanging out and talking about childhood, as you do, and they were sharing stories about, like, a bunch of them had gone on church retreats growing up, and I was like, no, I haven't done anything like that, but I did this thing called RILA. It stands for Rotary Youth Leadership Award. It's a thing I'd never heard of until I was a sophomore in high school and was told, guess what? You made it into RILA. You were selected this year. You and four other students in this school were selected for RILA. We were chosen, I guess by the teachers. It wasn't like a student council thing where students nominate and elect people. So I assume I was either chosen by teachers or by representatives of the Rotary Club in my particular part of New Jersey. And I was told very little about it, which is by design. I was given a pamphlet that had vague nonsense about how we'd be learning about leadership and community. And there would be different activities and little clubs that you can join, and a bunch of different students from all over the state would be there. And what appealed to me was that it was like 4 days away in the summer, staying at a college. It felt very adult, just being away from home and staying on my own. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go and live in a dorm for 4 days. Are you fucking kidding me? This is incredible. I don't care. I will pretend to learn about leadership. And you get there, and there are these people who are mostly college students, and they're so fucking pumped, and they greet you, and like they take your bag, and they're very much like, goodbye, parents, we've got it from here. And the guy's walking me to my dorm room where I'll be staying, and like, I hope you're ready for the weekend that's going to change your life. And like, a lot of it is normal stuff. You're having meals together. There are a bunch of icebreakers where you're meeting the other people. There's a few hundred kids who are all doing this, and you're broken up into smaller groups of like five or six words. Like, we're all in this together, but you six are unit 12 or whatever it's going to be. And you're hanging out. It's very social. It's very still unclear what it is. And eventually this guy, Dave, the only adult the entire weekend, shows up and gives essentially motivational speeches. He just like speaks an hour a day doing a TED talk about responsibility and communication and relationships and leadership. And he's a very effective speaker. And they would give you like false itineraries where they're like, oh, tomorrow you're going to do a hike at 10 a.m. and then you're going to do this and you're going to do that. And then tomorrow rolls around and there's a pounding at your door at 7 a.m. And they're like, wake up, we're doing yoga now. And you're just like brought to a field to do like group yoga or group like dance aerobics stuff every morning. And one of these lectures, Dave brought up some high school girl, some tiny teenage girl on stage, and had her do this thing after one of his speeches where she wrote a goal on a piece of wood, something that she thought was out of reach but that she wanted. And then he was like, now you're going to break this board with your bare hands. And she tried, and she couldn't do it. And he's pumping her up, and we're all pumping her up, because now we've all thoroughly drank the Kool-Aid of this, because this guy is such a good speaker, and we really want this stranger to succeed. And she's fucking crying. She tried again, and she couldn't do it. And then finally, she could. She punched right through her board, and we fucking lost it. And then he was like, Marissa did this thing, and you all believed in her. Do you think you could too? And we're like, yeah, sure, of course. And then the helpers brought out hundreds of boards of wood for all of us to do the same thing. And then we went off in our groups and we broke our boards with our hands, and it was incredible. And also kind of weird. And another night, we all got together, and I forget what the context or prompt was, but people were encouraged to just get up and share kind of traumatic stories. And a lot of people did. They told stories about like parents' divorce or losing a friend or struggles with an eating disorder, and people were crying. Like a kid I went to high school with, whom I didn't know too well, told a story about his brother passing away, and I had like no one had any idea about that. And a lot of these stories began with, I've never told anyone this before. And it's whenever people who weren't talking were moved by someone else's story, they would just sort of instinctively get up and put a hand on their shoulder, and then huge groups would form of people with hands on shoulders, most of them strangers, just openly sobbing at night. And at the time it was like very bonding and very helpful and instructive. There was another night where we were brought to the woods around a large fire, and we made some pledge that I don't remember, and we all lit candles in this large circle around the fire. And as I was telling this story to my coworkers, I was like, huh, I think this was a low-key cult.
I do have a lot of questions about this, Daniel. Before you said cult even, I was wondering, at any point, was religion even mentioned during this?
No. Things that I remember David speaking about were the dangers of radicalization, and which seemed like a strange thing to bring up in a cult, because I was like fully ready to do whatever he told me to do. But this was after September 11th. This was the summer after September 11th. So he was talking about how radicalization had led to people being so convinced that they were right. This is a phrase that always stuck into my head. That what did they do with that knowledge? Those bastards drove planes into the Twin Towers. And that was the closest thing to like anything political.
Wow. Well, but that, also, that had come to up. Even bring up the... like. In a group setting like this, where you're very enthusiastic and all together, somebody saying radicalization is bad is a weird red flag too.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so
it all felt like, and I want to be clear, I was, it felt really good. It was a very powerful trip for me, and like the other people who were the four other kids from my high school that I, you know, knew to different levels of familiarity. After that, we were like, there was like a special bond. Forever.
Okay.
Like to this moment. And it sought to teach a lot of things about being open and sharing your feelings. Like that was, I think a lot of what they wanted was open up, share your feelings, and you will be rewarded with relationships. Which, like, you know, Good fucking luck. I'm descended from a long line of repressed Irish Catholic maniacs. It's gonna take more than 4 days to undo all that shit.
Well, then this may be a silly question, but were you clued in at all to the people who were hooking up or doing drugs during this whole time?
See, here's another funny thing about this. So you make so many... Because you're so, it's so vulnerable and it's taking place in such a short amount of time, you forge really strong emotional relationships with people very quickly. And I exchanged a lot of AOL Instant Messenger screen names so we can keep in touch with people. And one of the helpers, like one of the authority figures who was, must have been like a sophomore in college while I was a sophomore and freshman, we were chatting afterwards about Ryla, and he was like, so like, let me know, who did you, you hook up a lot? And I was like, no. And he said, why?
Yeah.
That's the whole point. What were you doing? And I was like, I was learning about leadership. I was doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing. He was like, yeah, I mean, like you're away from parents for 4 days in dorm rooms with one adult who doesn't give a shit. Why wouldn't you? This is why I like it. And this is how I learned that I am pretty susceptible to cults, is that I remember thinking, like, I would have if you guys told me to. I just didn't know.
So you weren't even included at all to the fact that the people around you were all just blowing each other.
No, yeah. I'm like full bore on like the emotional aspects and like trying to learn more about empathy and learning how to investigate my own biases. All these things that are like genuinely good things to learn. I was very committed to learning them. And while I guess other people were like, yeah, I'm going to pretend to cry about this kid talking about his mom jumping off a fucking bridge or whatever, and then I'm going to nail that chick who broke her board earlier.
Well, it's okay. I used to do a thing. I took acting classes when I was a kid. It's something that I sort of fell into because my brother did it. And you do just what your older brother does because you like him and you admire him. And so I also did these acting classes, and it was with a very intense woman who did have sort of like a cultish group of kids around her. And a lot of them were kind of wayward teens, the type of people who would fall into something like acting very early on.
Theater is so culty. It sucks. We don't talk about it enough. It's so fucking crazy what theater teachers do with kids. It's real bad.
It's massively irresponsible. But anyway, there was a lot of drug use out in the open during all of this. But then there was also just kind of behind the scenes sex that generally happened. And we would do these things called vision quests, which were like a week long or like a 4 day long trip together where
it's a wrestling movie.
But this one's a little different, Dan. Let me tell you how. Nobody wrestles. We there's like a sweat lodge, there's a bonfire. There is a lot of that all of you sitting in a room breathing together, and then everyone gets up and tells some sort of devastating story about their life, and they're in tears, and everyone just sits there and watches them tell the story. And it's about like opening yourself up and becoming vulnerable and learning how to access all these different parts of yourself, so that when you're acting, like you can access all this stuff at like at the drop of a hat. I was also very, very on board with it. I didn't do any of the drugs aspects of it when I was young, and I was very curious about the sex that was happening, and it was not happening to me. Like just people, all of a sudden you just sense this weird dynamic change in the group, and like suddenly you're just aware of the fact that these two people know each other a lot better, and you're like, what, when did they hang out like together? Like, you know, like when you're with a group of people who have hung out more than you've hung out with anybody else there, and you're like, oh, okay, there's these people have made their each other's fingerprints are on one another, not in like a literal way, and just like, oh, they know each other.
But, no, there's like a shared secret suddenly.
Yeah, and it was very, very strange. It wasn't, there was just an energy. It was not them touching each other. It wasn't them winking or anything that obtuse. It was just like, all of a sudden, I was like, fuck, they know each other really well all of a sudden.
Right, and you kind of want to be like, what is it? Did you guys see a fun movie last night? What is it? I want in. Tell me what it was.
Yeah,
I want to be part of this too.
Is this the drug thing? Did you guys get high together? But no, it's just they were all fingering each other off in the woods together. And I was never asked to participate in any of that. I didn't participate in any of that. And so I did feel a little left out. Like, that's part of the reason maybe why I wasn't full tilt into the cult aspect of it, was it was like, well, they're clearly, they've got something else going on that I'm not invited to. So yeah. Let's see, maybe I'm good at basketball.
It's very funny that without prompting, you knew that there was a bunch of sex happening at Ryla over in the wings.
That's just the way it goes. So I'll tell you, mine is that it's somewhat similar in that before I went to my high school, there's an orientation trip called Wilderness, and it's a 10-day long trip where the first 3 days you go off into the woods, you work on a Forest Service project. And like you're building a raised trail or you're cutting down trees or whatever it is. And then the rest of the trip, you're off. You're only following a topographic map. So you're not using trails.
I'm sorry. I need to jump in. Yeah. There's no reason for me to be on this podcast. You should just write the stories that I imagine would have been in your journal growing up and just say them into a microphone. Like, tell people what you think normal is, and honestly, it's going to be a much more successful podcast than this one.
I haven't even gotten to the part yet that I was like, "Wow, that's pretty fucked up." the rest of the trip is you're following a topographic map. You're off, like, you're not on trails. You're off above timberline, so there's no trees around because they can't grow at that elevation, and you're just sort of like cruising across these passes, and you have a destination in mind. But it's a group of you. There's maybe like 7 to 10 of you. And towards the end of the trip, you do a thing called solo. And solo is 24 hours spent alone. The guides, whoever, there's a teacher and then there's a student guide working together, usually a senior. And they will take the kids off like a mile away from each other, and they're in the middle of this big radius. And you spend 24 hours alone without food and by yourself. And you don't bring, on these trips, you don't have tents. You've got a tarp that you share with everybody. So you don't have a tent or anything. You've got your sleeping bag, some necessities other than food. You've got water. But the idea is that you just spend this time with yourself without any sort of interruptions. And it was terrifying to me. The idea of it, I was a late bloomer. So I was like, when I was 14, I was still about a year and a half away from puberty. And I was scared about every aspect of this trip because it was a huge pack. I was worried that I have to carry the same amount of stuff as everybody else because, you know, I'm still using the same amount of gear. It's just I weigh a lot less. I was very scared. I was scared of the idea of solo. Just being out there by myself was very unnerving to me.
Did you, looking back as an adult, do you have like a winking suspicion that there was someone 20 yards away watching over you, making sure that you were actually safe?
Because I became a wilderness assistant and we did not. But I did find out once I became a wilderness assistant, I did find out how many kids were just fucking on these trips.
Okay.
And how fast, because they don't know each other yet. They meet on the first day of wilderness, and by day 10, there's already relationships and people who've already hooked up on these trips. But the scary part was the solo to me. I thought that was just like this rite of passage that everybody had to do. I knew it was coming for like 3 years before I went to high school, and I was scared of it. And then got to the trip, did the trip. On the trip, there was a new teacher who was also there with us, a French teacher, who the day before the solo broke his ankle, compound fracture. It was just sticking out, like his bone was sticking out of his ankle. Ugh. And my thought at the time was, oh, thank God. And so three of us, they picked three guys to run out, basically. And we didn't end up being in the same area where we thought we were on the map. So it ended up being, instead of just like running out 5 miles to a trailhead, we ran 11 miles to a trailhead, got there at dark, and eventually like walked down the street and found this long road and found a police officer. And then we spent the night in a town hall. The next morning they went up with a helicopter. They got him and everything. When I would tell the story to people of what happened, it was always with like this
how lucky I was that I didn't have to go on solo until like enough people corrected me. They're like, that's not the lead. The lead of the story is this guy broke his ankle in front of you. You saw this man's bone. What an intimate experience.
No, I agree. It's good that you didn't have to do the scary thing.
And so that was something that I really came to terms with, where I was like, oh, not everybody was worried about this thing.
Yeah. What is one supposed to learn in wilderness? What are they preparing you for? Are they, because it sounds like that's good preparation if they assume that for the rest of your life, some part of it will be lived in the woods.
Yeah, I think that's what they're trying to instill in you is first of all, creating this moment that you treasure, and then you want to come back to the wilderness at every opportunity, and then like an appreciation for the wilderness as well, because there's a ton of other wilderness trips throughout the year. It's a very outdoor oriented school,
so sorry for jumping in again, it's like it's mandatory for everyone. There can't be someone who is like, look, I think it's pretty clear I'm going into law and we'll leave Colorado as soon as possible. Do I still need to camp in this place alone where sometimes an errant bone will pierce through someone's ankle?
Well, first of all, Dan, you can jump in any moment because I don't genuinely know what's interesting about any of this. So I'm just telling you details and hoping some of them stick to the wall. No, everybody has to go. No matter whether you're coming to school as a freshman or a senior, like you have to go on this trip. There are people who get pulled off of it for various reasons. Some people get Giardia from the water. Do you know what that is?
That's a disease that I'm only familiar with because dogs get it.
Yeah, Giardia is when you drink unclean or unsanitized water. If you're just going to like drink directly out of a river or a lake, just from animal feces and stuff, you can get Giardia, which is it's just a parasite, and you kind of keep it for the rest of your life. You have to.
Yeah, I mean, like it's definitely a threat for Jackson, but it's not one that I see looming around any corners.
Well, yeah, we live in a first world country. We're doing okay. So you're not purifying the water, but you're putting in iodine tablets in everything you drink because you can't carry water right. That whole trip. Everywhere that you go, you're like these murky, murky streams. You're just like ponds. You're pulling up water and then you're dropping in some iodine tablets and it tastes terrible. It stains your water bottle and everything. But
right. Kids
get dropped off for that. There are kids who are so unhappy out there that they poison themselves. They will like take a bunch of Tylenol or do something super dangerous. Not with the intention of killing themselves, but like they just want off, so they try and make mm-hmm. themselves sick. That's rare, but it does happen. My mom was the nurse, so she had a lot of stories about these things. And then the other one is that it will snow occasionally on you. It rains while you're out there, but if it gets just nasty, like if it's below zero at night and like there's worry that people would get frostbite, then they'll pull people out early. And you have the guide has a radio, and so she can call in if she needs to. Assuming, presumably, except on our trip where she left the radio at resupply after after we did the Forest Service project, she left the radio.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And what drew you back to wanting to be a guide, or is that like, does that get you like good resume or college credit points?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's what it was. Also, my brother, you know, everything. I realize everything I do is because my brother did it. My brother did it. It's like a badge of honor at the school if you become a wilderness guide as well, if you get chosen. And it was important to me to go out and do it again. I just like trips, too. I like camping. So I was like,
that's fair.
I want to do it.
Man, I tried to eventually become one of the helpers at Ryla and failed at it.
Wait. Did you apply, or how does it work?
It's just as vague as everything else about this stupid fucking weird cult, where they're like, anyone who had done Ryla the next year is allowed to go to this one day, application summit. I don't know. It was in like a large gym, and you again break off into groups. And there's a bunch of extemporaneous public speaking that is required. No one is ever explicit about what the criteria is for what they're looking for. You do, like, you'll consume some information and then apply critical thinking and speak on it. And sometimes you have to get emotional, not as emotional as like it's in the woods and you're crying on shoulders or anything like that, which is like, this is me speaking from the heart about my experience with Ryla and why I want to have a leadership role within it. And I did that, you know, not going to beat myself up over it because I did as best I could just talking. And then with no real explanation as to why, you get a follow-up letter a week or so later that are just like, yeah, we didn't pick you. It's like, all right.
What was your energy like?
It was certainly like devastating to me at the time, but in retrospect, it's like, okay, like you're looking for a certain thing that you want and I don't have it. It's still like, it's like a popularity contest or a casting call where yeah. there's like a specific energy that they know they want for who can inspire the next gen of kids the way that I was inspired, and I did not have that energy.
Wait, I am curious. So there's an audition, right? Like you're standing in front of a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Pleading your case. Mm-hmm. I want to know, like, did you bring it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I really thought my intention was to just be as authentic as possible.
No, big mistake.
And I'm certain I did that. And I also watched other people who were like, who had like magnetism and charm. And I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty good. That's, I should have done that.
Wait, so you get to watch everybody else go?
Yes.
No. Oh,
it sucks.
God. Oh no. And okay. Do they have like pieces of paper? Are they writing while you're doing it?
I don't remember.
Oh God. Okay. I'm so curious about how they made their decisions on people. I wonder if it was like, he's got this quality. And what they all really mean is he's fuckable.
He's just I do quality. Remember one of the helpers that was like assigned to my group of six reaching out to me afterwards to be like, I was really pulling for you. But so it's clear that like all the helpers get together and vote on who made an impact. And I was not one of them.
And you only got to go to this one year.
I did. Yeah.
Oh, man. And were there kids younger than you there?
I think it was all freshman and sophomore. And then, like, again, the perfect older
age.
Helpers.
Yeah. Perfect age to get people into a cult.
It's the perfect age to get kids for a cult. It's the perfect age for kids who want to run off and safely engage in early sexual experiences. Or if you're me, really, really double down on learning about leadership and empathy.
Really double down on being Leonardo from the Ninja Turtles. Everybody's favorite. Yeah. The guy who's a stickler for the rules, who puts duty before self. Yeah.
Yeah. When I hear that theme song and they're like, Raphael is cool but rude. And I'm like, yeah, who's that for?
No, thank you. Wow, Dan. And did you guys do, there's a thing that I've done the board thing. The board thing mm-hmm. is bullshit. Because everybody can punch their one. Was that first girl a plant?
No.
Okay.
I talked to her. We became really close after that. And I talked to her for years afterwards, and she was not a plant.
Did you guys do anything else, like walking on coals, or?
We didn't do that. We did. I think we watched a bunch of movies and then discussed conflict resolution. After the movies, like the thing was all over the map of what we were learning. There was one time where we were divided into groups based on all the countries on the planet, and we were given a certain amount of like beans, some kind of token that represented the resources that we had, and we were trying to solve a problem of like how we can distribute these beans to our countries. I'm butchering the discussion, but the thing that we were supposed to realize by the end of this exercise was that the United States had too much and the rest of the world had too little. Like the design of the game was to get us to like articulate, oh, if America would just help Libya, then everyone could have pizza. Instead of, well, because that's what was at stake. Whoever like won the game gets to have pizza, and the rest of us would have like fire festival sandwiches or whatever.
You eat the beans.
Yeah, we eat the beans. And like they wanted us to come to a point where a bunch of 14 and 15-year-olds were saying out loud, as if it was their idea, oh, if America just shared her wealth, then we could all be prosperous. Yeah. Which, you know, is an important lesson. A strange thing to, like, not tell the parents of kids that this is what they're getting into. Where it's like, hey, it's a pamphlet. You're going to meet new friends and you're going to watch movies and do yoga. That's it. Nothing else.
That's so...
And then they get a bunch of kids who come home who are just like, guess what, Mom?
I got to say, Dan,
America's being selfish.
I'm way into this.
I am too.
I think it sounds like it's just a bunch of people telling you what to do a lot, and everything is really structured and polished for like mm-hmm. the lesson you're supposed to get from it. And that's what I want out of my entire life. It's just like people who tell me when to move from one place to another, when to get up, like when I'm supposed yeah. to go to bed. And then they're like, and now we're going to do this thing. Who knows what you'll get from it? And then by the end, they're like, you got the right thing. And you're like, yeah. Oh, there was a secret thing.
Like, there's no clear time limit for anything. There was one thing where we had like a giant full barrel of water in the woods and a bunch of ropes. And they were just like, we need you to use the ropes to take that barrel from where it is and put it over there. You can't put your hands on the barrel though. All right, see ya. When you're finished with this, you'll have lunch. And the lesson that you're supposed to, that we ended up landing on was someone climbed up on someone else's shoulders and was like, look at me, listen to me. Who has a plan? And then the person who had a plan like spoke up and articulated their plan and explained the physics of this is how if we put these ropes here and we all do this, just like a person who was delegating to other students what they should do.
Yeah.
And then we moved the barrel successfully because which is the real lesson is like who's going to step up and be a leader and what are they going to do with that power? Because for the first 30 minutes, everyone's just sort of milling about and yelling at each other yeah. and arguing. And until someone steps up and says the thing that needs to be said.
Amazing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that with Vision Quest. There was like a lot of, after we did the Sweat Lodge, we did this arrow thing. Do you know what Sweat Lodge is?
Yeah.
Okay. After we did the Sweat Lodge, we do this arrow thing. We all got in a
Wait, is it any more complicated than what I think when I hear those two words next to each other?
You
go into a lodge and sweat?
Yeah, it's an outdoor sauna. Basically, you build it up out of pine needles and branches and things like that. There's a lot of hot rocks in the middle of it. You have a fire outside that's got rocks in it. And you bring these rocks in, you put them in the middle, and then you're just pouring water over them. And I can't remember what kind of shit we were supposed to be seeing in there or anything like that, but...
How long are you in there?
A while, like 45 minutes.
Good God.
And then you go bathe in the river afterward. There was a lot of nudity on this too, I should mention.
Oh, that sounds bad.
It's no wonder that people were all hooking up. There was a very free atmosphere that people didn't have to wear shirts if they didn't want to and stuff like that. That might have been after the drug use. I can't remember. It's all kind of become a blur now to me. But there was another thing we did where we all got in a treehouse and we had arrows. And you put the back of the arrow against a wall and then you put the point of the arrow in your throat, like the soft spot at the bottom of your throat. And you hold it there without your hands and then you press on it until the arrow flexes and breaks. And that's like that's another one of those bored ones where it's like, it seems like, no, I can't do that. And then as soon as you do it, you're like, okay, there's a trick to it. There's something like, this is something that looks very hard, but is very easy for people. And it makes them feel very good about themselves. Like a Tough Mudder.
Yeah. Which we both did.
Yeah.
Folks, we love doing this show and we'd like to keep doing it. And there's a couple ways you can support us. One of them is telling your friends to listen to it. But another one is to show some love to our amazing sponsors. And this week we are talking about Skillshare. Skillshare is amazing. It's an online learning community with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people. You can learn new skills. You can deepen existing passions, as I've been doing with some bass guitar classes I'm taking, and get lost in creativity. There are so many important conversations happening in the world right now. Your voice is more essential than ever, so explore classes to unlock your creativity for social good. Skillshare yeah. offers creative classes designed for real life and all the circumstances that come with it. These lessons can help you stay inspired, express yourself, and introduce you to a community of millions.
I've just been taking a class recently that I'm really, really loving called Design Great Stuff, How to Make Merch. And you might be thinking, Soren, I've never seen any of your merch.
I am thinking that. I'm certainly thinking that.
But if you'll remember, we had a coworker, Randall Maynard, who used to make us action figures of ourselves occasionally on our birthdays. Mm-hmm. He was a guy who could design something at the drop of a hat. He could make a Funko doll. He could make an action figure of you. He could make a lot of really cool stuff. And I was always so jealous of that. And now that I have a child, he's very curious about these things that Randall once made for me because they're sitting around my house. And so I thought, what a cool thing it would be for me to make these kinds of things for my son. And so I started watching this video, trying to figure out if I was to make an action figure for my son, like how would I even go about doing that? Haven't gone to that section yet, but the rest of it has also been very insightful and interesting.
That's fantastic. And that's the kind of thing that people can learn how to do. You can all learn how to make action figures of Soren for his child. You can explore your creativity and get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started and join today by heading to Skillshare.com/QQ. That's 2 free months of unlimited access to thousands of classes at Skillshare.com/QQ.
Dan, I have a question for you.
Okay.
This one has nothing to do with your life.
Oh, good.
This is about movies and TV.
Great.
Is there a movie or TV show that you think would have been better served or would be better served by being animated? Like, they're just sort of held back by the limitations of live action, and you can tell.
Yes, I do. I want to say Game of Thrones. And, like, I know that doing so would deprive us of the great acting that we got from that show, but there are so many things that we've learned since it's come out where it's like, hey, why did the direwolves just stop fucking showing up? Why do we just not see them anymore? I was like, oh, it's really expensive to make direwolves. That's it. And I was like, okay, well then if it's too expensive to make this show live action, then just don't do it. like especially having read the books and just knowing like what the size of the wall is supposed to be and the size of the dragons are supposed to eventually be, I assume. And the size of direwolves, like all those things that you just can't really do even on massive HBO budgets. It's like, well, then just do it animated. Like then, like it's cheaper.
Yes, I agree with you. There's the whole fight at night that was very hard to see with the White Walkers. And then you have a whole scene where these Dothraki you've been following for a huge chunk of the story and you've heard about nothing about how great they are out on the plains.
Yeah.
And then they go out at night and all the entire battle is just you watching lights go out.
Right. They just get snuffed out. And it's like, yeah, I mean, like this is the cheapest way to do this battle. Like, no.
All right.
Then just don't do it.
Yeah. I'm with you. Mine is also an HBO show. I think Westworld would be a vastly better show if it was animated. I think
immediately, I don't think I agree with you, but go on.
There's a lot more that you can do with the robots themselves. Like if you want these people to be superhuman, not just intellectually, but they also just like they're physically superior. And there's a lot more you can do in an animated series. There's a lot more you can do with them getting fucked up in a show that's animated, because you're allowed to show a lot more. Like them, the absolute violence atrocities that happen to these robots is a lot easier to digest and watch if it's animated. And I think that I'm more likely to lend some suspension of disbelief to an animated show that I don't understand than I am a live action one. Yeah. Anime or something has taught me over time that like, oh, if I'm not getting it, it's just because I'm cerebrally not there. Like I haven't figured it out yet. And Westworld is not that. Westworld feels like they don't know what the fuck they're doing. They don't know what they're making. And I would lend them that kind of leniency if the show is animated.
It would certainly help me with the violence. Like I'm old enough and there's enough real violence in the world that when they're showing me like, oh, this is a robot woman, so she's not really a person. So that's why we're going to have some cowboy beat the shit out of her. It's like, no, but it still looks like someone's beating the shit out of a woman. And that's difficult to watch personally. So if it was a cartoon, I would have an easier time. And maybe they want it to be difficult to watch, but I think that's stupid.
It's also where they're allowed to go. There's just a lot more opportunity. I'm thinking more towards the first season, but like when you want to create a whole Western world, they're really strapped to only create a world based on whatever that set is that's in northern Los Angeles County.
Well, it's been burned down now.
Yeah, it's gone. But yeah. Like you have like a strip and that's all you're allowed to use. And you're like, all right, well, where are we going to set these scenes? Well, I guess we set this one in the bar again because that's what we've got.
Right.
But like you can explore that world entirely. It's not just that and then a fucking landscape of Chaparral where you're allowed to go have some scenes. It's,
yeah.
You can really have like a full Red Dead Redemption type of world there. And you get, you have, it's, there's just so many more things you could do. I feel like, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I want to, because like we've both picked like big budget shows, and I'm trying to, I wish I could come up with a sitcom that would be better animated than it would not.
Yeah. They just feels like they're strapped for money every single time you watch an episode.
Not even like I wonder what like a completely free, meaning creatively free, 30 Rock would look like, where they can do absolutely whatever they want.
Yeah.
Because that's a show that loves to cram in many characters like The Simpsons does, and loves a lot of quick cutaway jokes and throwing as many jokes in as possible.
Yes.
That I would be interested in seeing a fully animated 30 Rock.
Well, say, the reason I thought of that question is because I love working for an animated show. It's so much fun and it's so freeing that when you're writing in the room, like you can do anything. There's nothing you're beholden by. You don't have to set a show that's entirely in the house because that's where the cameras are, or like, mm-hmm. Well, it's going to cost a lot for us to do scenes everywhere else. No, you just go wherever you want. We're going to go to Cuba for this one. The only thing you can't really do are big crowds, and that's just like a rule of animation.
I'm really curious if we want to get into the weeds on a writing question, because you came from Cracked like I did. I mean, you did Sketch before that and whatnot, but we were always pretty budget constrained there. That's why so many of our shows were different variations of 2 to 4 people talking in a room, with very few exceptions. Was that, when you started working for American Dad, was that like immediately freeing, or did you need to like punch the old impulse out of your head?
I really worked hard at it. I think it was very freeing, but I also found myself occasionally just like coming up with ideas. When I was going to pitch story ideas for when I was going to write mine, I'd sit there and think, is this just a bunch of talking heads? Is this just a bunch of people sitting around a room? And didn't even realize that I'd done it. My last episode, which I wrote, it coming out July 20th, was one that after I wrote it, the director came up and said, I'm glad you wrote such a small episode. And I was like, what does that mean? And it was like small in terms of places that they had to build and like that they had to draw and create. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think about it, but I had written one that's basically takes place exclusively in the house, or in the house in a cemetery. And I didn't even think about it, but that's just Cracked ingrained in me. It's like, no, you got to find a way to keep it all in one place.
I had an informative chat with our one of our directors, Chris, because we have every once in a while we'll jump to sketches at Last Week Tonight. Usually like to end the episode, if we have the time, we'll have like a dumb sketch that sort of sums up everything that dramatizes everything that you just learned as an audience member. And I realized that the script that I had turned in was essentially man talks directly to camera for 4 minutes, and worked with him on it. It was like where he can be like, here are the things that I can do if you want to maneuver the writing in that direction. It's like, oh yeah, that's way better. I'm sorry, I'm used to having Cody hit record at the YouTube space.
One of us took off a shoe so we could put the boom in it.
It was something I had to get over, but it was also like, it was immediately very freeing. Just like hearing people when they're breaking a story, being like, okay, and this one, like, they're getting into an Instagram life and they're becoming van culture, van life culture. And then maybe like it becomes a cult, and then Haley gets sucked into it. And then they send her down to, I can't remember where they said, like Columbia. And I'm like, but what looks like Columbia around here? My first instinct. I don't think that's a good idea.
Oh, we can't do this scene. We're losing light.
Airplane, hold for airplane. Yeah, none of that. None of that ever happens. It's wonderful. I love it.
So I think we should wrap up soon, but also a couple of key takeaways is that I think you should write we should write the wilderness movie, because you don't know what's interesting about it.
Right.
And we should also write the Ryla,
oh man,
a teen sex romp where the main character doesn't know that there's a teen sex romp happening. I think we should also write that.
It's just sort of happening in the background. Yeah.
Just everyone's fucking and one guy is learning about leadership only to lose at the last second.
Like, bear with me here, Dan. That's a really funny porn.
I will not bear with you.
Bear is in B-A-R-E.
Yeah. Oh, God, of course.
All right. Well, I'm going to go find all of our social accounts then.
Okay.
I don't know. Actually, we should probably fill time during this. You know what you could do? You told me the other night that you thought the point of being famous is that's how you get women to like you. So why would anyone not use their fame to get women? Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah. So it's going to sound like skeevy and shitty, but I was never great at talking to women one-on-one. That was always like something that I struggled with because of anxiety and a lack of confidence. But I know that if you're famous, you get access to a whole lot more people. And I knew in my heart that what I wanted to do was elevate other voices. And if I got famous enough, I could learn from a larger and more diverse pool of people, because my fame was something that I could offer them. Like, I didn't have anything to offer before that. I brought nothing to the table for most of my life, Soren, until I became, as you know, incredibly famous. So once I realized I was coming to the table with nothing, I thought, I need to add something to this. So I became famous, and then suddenly I had more access to more women, so I could learn their stories and elevate their voices and educate myself on these different stories.
It's
a great question. I really like it.
I have to clarify.
I'm sorry?
I have to clarify. You're using your success to help other women?
Yes.
Exclusively?
I wouldn't say exclusively. I'm using my success to elevate other voices and be a mentor.
Okay.
You
did it. No, you did it. You're done. You're done. You did a nice job. On Twitter, you can follow Daniel at @DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren, your best friend, at Soren_LTD. I'm not even going to talk about Michael. Michael's not even on the show anymore. Not till COVID's over. Or until we buy him a microphone. You can also follow Quick Question at @QQ_SorenandDan. You can email us at QQ@SorenandDaniel@gmail.com. And you can follow, find, hire our producer, sound engineer, and editor Gabe at GabeHarder.com in the future. I'm done.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.